Dan Gordon of the George Washington University Law School, former administrator of federal procurement policy, writing for the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee's Permanent Subcommittee on Investigation on Defense Acquisition Reform. And you're writing this, I was reminded of your previous life at the Government Accountability Office, and the way that you frame this, it looks remarkably like a six-page highlights page, my friend.
Nicely put. Thank you, Francis.
You start with three points to keep in mind, and the first of those that we should think about, you point to out to the committee, is that the Pentagon is spending far less money on contracts than it has for years. What's the significance of that in your mind, Dan?
I think, Francis, that people often think that contract spending at DOD and across the federal government is simply going up, 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 and it's completely out of control. That is not the facts. The facts are extraordinary. The fact that we reduced DOD spending on procurement contracts from about $360 billion to less than $310 billion is an enormous decrease between 2012 and 2013. We don't have the figures for 2014 yet, but the fact is we are not dealing with a spending machine out of control, quite the contrary.
You provide some interesting context to that, too, I think, to the committee. You write, it's especially interesting to see that contract spending at the next biggest contracting agencies barely changed. Spending on contracts at NASA, Energy, HHS, Veterans Affairs, and Homeland Security combined remained essentially unchanged at approximately $89 billion. What was it that you wanted the committee to take away from that context, Dan?
I think because this committee and the leadership of Senator McCain and Senator Levin is very, very good here, I think the committee is focused on defense procurement, defense spending. That's natural because their leadership roles in the Armed Services Committee. And it is extraordinary to see how much DOD has already reduced contract spending.
You're right. Whatever the cause and however painful it's been, the fact is that DOD's found ways to substantially reduce spending on contracts. Do you mean painful in the context of the issues of readiness and capability that the uniformed leaders talk about at the Defense Department, or some other way, Dan?
Unfortunately, Francis, the pain has been in about every possible way. There is certainly concern about impact on readiness. But there has also been pain across the board. There has been pain and disruption to programs, pain and disruption to the acquisition workforce. There's been pain to the contractors. There has been pain every place, but we have succeeded in reducing spending. The real trick now is to figure out a way to go forward, which more likely will require more spending rather than less spending.
The second of the three points that you want the committee to keep in mind is, you write, defense procurement spending falls into several very different categories. And you follow that point by writing, contracting for major weapon systems has unique characteristics, some would say unique pathologies. What drove you to choose that word?
As someone that's enjoyed reading, if that's the right word, enjoyed reading many GAO reports over the years, you'll see again and again this pattern of DOD moving forward with production of a major weapon system before they had settled on a development process that was really finished.
And it doesn't seem to matter who the uniformed officials are. It doesn't seem to matter which administration or which party is in power. And it doesn't even seem to matter what philosophically, or how philosophically, excuse me, they view the procurement acquisition requirements process. It seems everybody continues to do it that way, despite the fact that we have a growing realization that's a bad way to do it.
And that's one reason I call it a pathology. But that is more or less unique to major weapons systems. It is, and my point in this part of the paper was to point out how different major weapon systems are from everything else the DOD buys.
I want to come back to that idea of concurrency in a minute, Dan, but you write, DOD's spending on contracts other than for major weapon systems is broadly similar to acquisition spending at other federal agencies. Much of it's on IT systems and support, and most of it's on services rather than goods. I guess then I wonder, do we focus then too much on defense acquisition reform, and I'm using air quotes around those three words, at the expense of broader acquisition reform with maybe a sub-focus on the weapon systems component at DOD?
Now, I'm perfectly comfortable with people focusing on both. acquisition of the way we buy major weapon systems and acquisition reform of the way we buy everything else. My point, though, is if you're focused on everything else, there's probably no reason to start making new rules for DOD that don't apply in civilian agencies. The uniformity of the rules across the government is a very good thing. You don't want to give that up without good reason. Major weapon systems, no problem. They're only at DOD. If we had the Department of Agriculture building major weapon systems, we'd have other concerns. But when all you're buying is IT goods, IT services, janitorial services, whatever, there's no reason that DOD would have different acquisition rules from the rules that apply in the civilian agencies.
Dan Gordon of the George Washington University Law School is writing for the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations and giving information on defense acquisition reform to that committee. And the third point that you would like that committee to keep in mind, Dan, is distinguishing the three phases of the acquisition process. And you lay them out as acquisition planning, competition and award of contracts, and management of contract performance. And you write that most people have a preconceived notion about those three phases and the troubles therein that doesn't turn out to be the case.
Absolutely. The real problem, in my opinion, is acquisition planning and contract management. The middle phase, competition award of the contracts, is actually, in my experience, the one that works best. But the real problem, the challenge for both the Senate and the Congress overall, is that it's the competition and award rules phase that Congress can most easily legislate about. That's where you legislate. You can't legislate good acquisition planning, although WSARA has actually helped, and you can't legislate good contract management. So I'm worried that Congress is going to tinker with the competition and award rules, even though they're not really the problem.
All right, three myths about the challenges that defense acquisition reformers face is the next part of your presentation to the subcommittee. And you write, first, it's not true that our defense procurement system is broken. Why does everybody think it is if it's not, Dan?
Because when you have a scandal, and we have scandals because we are not perfect, it is very easy to extrapolate, even though that's a big long word, and assume that it means that everything is broken. And that's not true. Ask our soldiers whether they get good support in the field. Ask the contractors whether we have rigorous competitions. Ask the non-government organizations whether we have levels of bribery and corruption that they see around the world. We have an extraordinarily well-functioning system, and the fact that we sometimes have problems means that we're human. It doesn't mean that the system is broken.
So let's step back then and examine that from a worldview perspective. If we take on the broader topic, the philosophical topic of defense acquisition reform from the perspective that the system overall works well and is highly functional compared to what we see in other places of the world, how do you think that influences the way that we will look at ways to make it better as opposed to the idea of walking into it assuming that it's busted and we need to do a lot to make it work?
The difference is the assumption that we need to make sweeping changes as opposed to making focused improvements. Do we need focused improvements? You bet we do. We have too many sole source contracts. We have too many situations where we run a competition and we only get one bid. That's a terrible thing. We have too many situations where our specifications are written in a way that is simply unintelligible. Contractors don't know what the heck we want, or they're overly anti-competitive, or sometimes they're just a generation behind the technology. I could go on and on, but those are specific things to focus on. We are not dealing with a system that should be swept aside as broken.
The second myth that you want to do away with in your presentation to the committee is the main causes of cost overruns and schedule delays in major weapon systems are not incompetent federal employees or nefarious contractors. And I find it interesting and insightful and accurate that you address both sides of that equation in that comment, Dan.
Oh, absolutely. As I say later in the paper, bashing federal employees is unhelpful and unjustified, and the same is true for contractors. The vast majority of federal employees, the vast majority of our contractors do a great job. When we end up with big cost overruns and schedule delays in our major weapon systems, it's often because the original cost figure was completely unrealistic and the original schedule was unrealistic. And if people had been honest on day one, they would have said that. but there were incentives built into our system. There are incentives built in that cause us to go with a wink and a nod, agreeing to costs that aren't realistic and to schedules that aren't realistic.
But it strikes me that in those scenarios, there are a lot of really smart people doing really good work in those scenarios, Dan, and they know, they must know, that the timelines and the budgets aren't going to turn out the way that they look. Why do they continue to go along with it? I mean, that sounds kind of like we're back to the pathologies thing we talked about earlier in our conversation.
Absolutely a pathology. I think GAO in particular has done great work, and I mentioned in my paper Paul Francis, the managing director for acquisition sourcing management at GAO, because he's focused on this. You're dealing with a situation where everybody seems to be comfortable with what's going on. I do think that WSARA has helped in this area, and I defer to the experts that tell me, because frankly, this is an area where they understand better than I do. But I'd suggest that your listeners think this way. Step back. Overall, when we get a major weapon systems delivered, I think we need to ask, have we gotten a very impressive product from the contractor, and did we get it on a reasonable timeline at a reasonable price, even if it took longer than we initially expected, even if it cost more than we initially expected? If in the final analysis we've got a terrific weapon system, and we have a lot of terrific weapon systems, and the price was not too much and it didn't take too long, I think we should say our system is working in a good way.
Dan Gordon of the George Washington University Law School, writing for the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, Senators Levin and McCain. And when we come back, the third of the myths that he would like to dispense with, and then recommendations about how to make things better when we continue on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio.